And it's 8:06 here on KPCW Park City, a hazy, chilly morning in the Wasatch back today. Thanks for tuning into the local news hour. I'm Connor Thomas, filling in for Leslie today. And with a look at more of what's happening weather-wise in the Wasatch back, we have on the phone ABC 4 meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning, Nate.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Wasatch back. Yeah, a bit of a smoky start this morning due to the Yellow Lake fire, which, of course, has exploded to over 19,000 acres now. So haze and smoke in the forecast today. Record high temperature potential as well for Park City. Just checked the Park City Library Station shows a record high of 74 today from 2020, forecasting 74 for Park City today as well. Southwest flow, of course, and high pressure keeping these temperatures well above average for this time of year. On the bright side, some good news. We have a little bit of moisture moving up from the southwest. It's expected to generate a few isolated showers, maybe a thunderstorm. So no guarantees of any rain for Park City, but there's a 20% chance. Smoke likely going to stick around into the overnight hours and tomorrow. Overnight lows expected to dip into the upper 30s once again. Highs near 75 again on Wednesday, so potentially flirting, if not new record highs, through the end of the week as these mid-70s are going to stick around for Park City. Southwest flow staying in place generally across the state. We'll start to bring partly cloudy skies into the area, though, through late week, and we're tracking a potential storm system that should move in sometime Sunday into Monday next week, help drop temperatures just a little bit. We should be in the upper 60s on Sunday. Partly cloudy skies, a chance of isolated showers, and that lingers into Monday next week with that slight chance of storms. So smoke for Heber as well, upper 70s today, low 80s. The record high for Heber today is 84, so not quite record highs, with 79 expected. Smoky skies tomorrow, 81, overnight lows near 40, in the upper 30s as we get into midweek, 82 for the high Thursday, 81 on Friday. Temperatures start to slide with some of the cloud cover and that chance of moisture Sunday, Monday next week. We should be in the mid-70s for Heber. Overnight lows in the upper 30s with a chance of moisture, as I mentioned, Sunday and Monday. Hopefully another storm system lined up behind it for Tuesday and Wednesday next week.
Yeah, and I was curious about that warm air in the afternoon. I feel like I've noticed some of the wildfire smoke dissipating in the mountain valleys because of is the inversion burning off somehow? Is that something you see with air quality?
Yeah, so typically overnight, the cold air pools in a lot of the mountain valleys, so cold air where it's more dense than the warmer air, it settles at the bottom. But then as we get the sunshine, the heating at the surface, it tends to warm, of course, the air, which rises that air and helps expand that inversion layer. So air tends to mix out some of the smoke and haze. And so, yeah, these temperatures really rebounding and responding to some of the warmer air that's moved in aloft or higher up in conjunction with just the high pressure that's been in place as well.
Something to look forward to. ABC meteorologist Nate Larson, thanks.
Thank you.
Coming up later in the hour, we'll be speaking with Summit County Manager Shane Scott. He'll preview tomorrow's county council meeting. Then the Wasatch County Health Department's immunization coordinator, Brenda Scobie, will be on the phone to talk about vaccination clinics for the upcoming flu and COVID season. Finally, Park City Christian Center's board chair and former executive director Rob Harder is going to introduce their new executive director, Steve Richardson, who is on the job right now. But right now, Summit County's Kimball Junction Branch Library featured a human library Saturday. KPCW's Christine Weller reports visitors had the chance to speak with eight living, breathing books.
Colville Branch Manager Susan Murphy helped organize the Human Library. She says the Human Library organization was started in Denmark over 20 years ago to build empathy and understanding in communities.
In a regular library, you come in and you check out paperback books. In a human library, you come in and you actually check out a human being for a 20-minute conversation. And all of the human beings, we call them human books, are people who have experienced bias or discrimination or stereotyping just because of who they are, what they believe, or what they look like.
Murphy says all the, quote, human books go through online training before participating in the library. The training helps them understand what kind of questions they might be asked and what to do if they start to feel uncomfortable. Diana Sampson volunteered to share her life experiences so she could raise awareness about living with a disability. Sampson is both a wheelchair user and a mother of four kids with autism. Samson said the biggest issues she faces as a wheelchair user are buildings not being accessible and people taking parking spots meant for people with disabilities, quote, just for a second.
There were times that I actually left a business and ended up not doing what I needed to that day because there was not an accessible parking spot and someone without placards was in the one that I needed.
Samson said she also encounters many well-meaning people who try to help her before asking if that's what she needs. For example, there was one instance when she had a manual wheelchair when a man ran over and just started pushing her.
I have issues with walking, but there are other things I can do for myself, and I'd like the opportunity to. So I would love it if people would ask first, do you need help? And if I say no, thank you, I would love for people to be able to respect that.
Carol Hazelton is on the Friends of the Library board, which supported the event. She spoke with Samson about her experiences and said it was a good opportunity to ask questions and not feel like you're being rude.
I asked if it was okay to get personal, and she said, yes, absolutely. So that was one of the pluses.
Chris Campbell also wanted to spread awareness, so he shared his experience as a transgender man. He said events like the Human Library are great because people have a lot of questions about things they haven't personally experienced, and this format gives them that opportunity. Campbell said transitioning was a journey of self-discovery. He said he realized he had been suppressing emotions throughout his life and was blocking connection with who he was. During each step of his transition, Campbell said he would check in with how he was feeling.
Am I wearing men's clothes because I want to be seen as a female wearing men's clothes, or because I want to be seen as a male wearing men's clothes? Am I male inside, or do I just prefer that presentation, right? So I think when we give ourselves the time and space to really explore and understand ourselves, we can get to the bottom of this.
Kay Harrison shared a similar sentiment about the value of being herself, which she said she learned after surviving a suicide attempt. Harrison said she struggled with depression throughout her life, but things were especially bad when she was working in a toxic environment. At one point, she said she started to believe that her husband, kids, and grandchildren would be better off without her. Harrison said she overdosed on pills, but was found by her husband, who revived her. Harrison said she spent 3 days in the hospital and 5 more in a psychiatric unit. That's where she says she started to heal.
I was able to really dial down to who I really was. I could be myself, and that's where I started to heal.
Harrison encouraged everyone to talk more about mental health and those who are struggling to get help. There are resources available.
The more we talk about it, the more it becomes mainstream. Allow people to speak up and speak out. Give people a place to go, to be safe. We need to allow people to be safe in their suffering.
This is the second time Summit County has hosted a Human Library event. About 50 people attended the library Saturday. If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health, call or text 988 at any time to connect with a trained crisis counselor. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
The Summit County Council meets in its regular Wednesday session tomorrow, beginning with some site visits. Here to preview it all with me is the county manager, Shane Scott. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So I guess the main thing for the next couple of months, though, is the budget. You presented the proposed budget last week. It's proposed at $90 million, but that's not without accompanying revenue increases. So could you sort of bring the listeners back up to speed on what's going on with the budget right now?
Yeah, we do have about a $7 or $8 million increase over last year, over the year we're currently in, over fiscal year 24. And you made a reference to the growing budget. I think a lot of times when people hear that the budget is higher, they think that means that it's costing the taxpayer more, and that's not necessarily the case. We have a growing budget. We have added expenses that have an associated revenue side of that. A good example of that is we have been tasked with adding school resource officers into all the schools. The school district is actually footing some of that bill, so we have an associated revenue side of that with the resource officers. It's not going to cost the county about $1 million $1 million, but more than half of that will come from the school district. So as budgets go up, that we are spending more money, but we can sometimes see an associated revenue side of that as well. And that helps offset the cost to the taxpayer.
Yeah, and I noticed, you know, one of the other things is you acquired the Skull Candy building. Skull Candy will pay you rent. And you started with the council retreat at the Skull Candy building last week. So are you moving services in there? And does it look like you'll be able to coexist and maintain that revenue for a little bit?
Yes, and you're exactly right. That's a really good example of something we took on, but there's an associated revenue side of it as well. We are working with Skull Candy, the organization, on how we would occupy that building together. As we ramp up negotiations with Dakota Pacific on the Kimball Junction area, we've been showing some of that neighborhood master planning, the process that we've been doing as part of the subcommittee. And if it all worked out as I would like to see it work out, we would move the library out of the Richens building in order to be able to work on that transit center and expanding that transit center, and that library would go into the Skull Candy building. That's what we're working on with Skull Candy right now. They are interested in not occupying the entire building, so it looks like it's going to work out well. The timing is maybe an issue we're still working through, but if I had my way, we would start renovations of the Skull Candy building in order for it to be a library as soon as next year.
And still that shortfall, though. Chief Financial Officer Matt Levitt has thrown out a few different numbers. What's sort of your latest estimation of how many millions we need to make up somehow or cut?
Well, I think we're in the $7 million range. We've acknowledged in this budget that would be made up by the emergency services sales tax if it were to pass. At the council meeting tomorrow, we're talking about truth and taxation, going through that process. As I think we've mentioned here, and I'm sure you have as well, in some of your articles, we have to decide whether or not to go through that process before the election. So we won't know if that sales tax passes until after we've already decided to go through the truth and taxation process. That does not mean that we have to raise taxes at that time. We don't decide to raise taxes until December. So we have to decide to go through the process before then, but we don't decide whether or not to raise taxes. It's been the direction I've received from council that if we do decide to go through truth and taxation and the tax does pass, we will not have to continue to go through the truth and taxation process.
Yeah, the timing of that, you know, seems, I guess, unfortunate from your perspective. Is that something all counties have to deal with? Because I know Park City Municipal's fiscal calendar is set off by like a 6-month gap between the end of the year like that.
Yeah, you're right. It is something the counties have to go through. I think you could make an argument on both sides of this. If I'm a voter and I see that, if I know the county is going through the truth and taxation process and I'm a homeowner and then I see the emergency services sales tax on the ballot, then I get to choose, essentially, if I choose to vote for the tax, I'm choosing that I'd rather see that that revenue be made up by the emergency services sales tax. If I choose not to, then I'm acknowledging that it's likely the county will go through the truth and taxation and my property taxes may be raised.
Yeah, and you know, as you've mentioned, that sales tax cannot be levied. It's a half without a vote of the voters on November 5th. It's a 0.5% sales tax accepting groceries, prescriptions, and gas as well.
Right.
You know, Levitt has mentioned that 65% of the county sales tax comes from non-primary residents, if I've got that right.
Right, visitors to the community is what we usually say.
One thing that he hasn't mentioned is what percent of the property tax revenue comes from non-primary residents, like secondary homeowners, commercial properties, things like that. Do you have that number?
I don't have that number, and he has gone through that exercise to evaluate that. I think there's also a case to be made that even if you aren't a primary resident, you are a secondary homeowner, you're still maybe part of our community. When somebody comes here from back east to ski, they come, they spend their dollars, and they leave. I think when you own a home, you have a little bit more you probably can't vote. You are a secondary homeowner, but you feel more of part of the community. So I think there's still a case to be made that the impact on the sales tax is still more of an impact from those outside of our community. But I think the secondary homeowners is a good argument, and he has gone through that process, and I'm not sure exactly what that number is.
Gotcha. And you know, I'm curious about more reasons why the budget is growing, reasons for the shortfall. One of the things we've reported on in the past is the landfill cell. We've got one cell there at Three Mile Canyon. We need another because it's now full. But I didn't see that in the budget presentation last week. Is it in a different pot of money right now? How does that factor into this shortfall?
Yes, it is in the budget. It's in the capital side of the budget. Technically, I think what happens is we transfer money from the general fund to the landfill fund specifically and spend it from the landfill fund. So that's where that money comes from. So the landfill fund is an enterprise fund. It's separate from the general fund. But your tie-in, I think, is something I'd like to highlight. We had a landfill plan that was done, I think it was even when Jana was still here, which was first year. So that was maybe 7 or 8 years ago, where we thought the landfill had 20 years of expansion to go. And here we are 7, 8 years later, and we're needing to do that. And I think you could really point to the visitor impact on the community. Airbnbs have really ramped up. Folks in Airbnbs, they don't recycle like we do in our community. They've really impacted the landfill, and that's really what we're looking for in this emergency services sales tax, is to offset those impacts. And that's a really good example of one that we would use that money on.
Yeah, and because the full-time population has shrunk over the past few years, as we've reported, so it's all visitors. Is there any other impact you're seeing from, say, secondary or anything?
Yeah, well, I think our secondary homeowners, if we're talking Airbnbs, there's a lot of impacts. Parking's a real major issue, something we hear about a lot. Of course, those visitors tend to eat out more. That impacts us in a positive way in some of our economic measures. But those visitor impacts are tremendous on our. I think Chief Zanetti reported that 60% of his calls during the winter are from folks that don't live in our community, whether those are skiers or just people that are just calling 911. If you just took all the visitors and removed them from our community, we would need much, much less services. And those are services that you and I are paying for. And right now, we have no mechanism to push that cost onto the visitor themselves. So that's, I guess, the reason why the council was chose to put this on the ballot. And I was going to say the word excited. I'm trying not to advocate for this. We're trying to stay politically neutral here, and we want people to vote their conscience on this. But there are reasons why we put it on the ballot, and that's one of them.
Sure. And if people tune in tomorrow, it looks like the presentation will kind of focus on options, if you can call them that, for what could be on the chopping block.
That's right. We're really trying to make the decision whether or not to go through the truth and taxation process. And if we don't go through truth and taxation and the emergency services sales tax does not pass, we'll have some major cuts to do. And some of those cuts are going to be really painful, and we're trying to highlight those. And of course, that's not that list is not meant to be exhaustive. There are other things that could potentially be cut. But even if we do go through truth and taxation, I think we're going to likely have to have some cuts, and some of those on the list I think are non-starters, but we want to put everything on there. And we haven't raised taxes in the county since 2017, and we've really ramped up our services. We've really ramped up our open spaces, and those things cost money to manage, and we're in some regards we're still just trying to keep up with what we've all seen what the cost of living has done over the last 7, 8 years since COVID, even the cost of services, the cost of consultants, everything's gone up so much that we're just in some ways just trying to keep the level of service that we do now.
Yeah, so that discussion begins at around 2:30, but a few hours before that, shortly before noon, the council looks like it's going to visit the Dakota Pacific property there at Kimball Junction, west side of 224, Tech Center Drive. What's the purpose of the site visit? What haven't they seen with this property already? It's been before them for a few years now.
Yeah, I think we just haven't walked on it. And as we've done that master planning process, I think it would be nice to sit on the property and point to things and say, this is where we're planning to put this building. This is where affordable housing might be. And this is where the new transit center might be. So I think it's an opportunity to do that. It was fortuitous that we're also talking about a cemetery in the same area. So we're right there across the street from Runnemuck is a potential cemetery site, so we could look at both of those sites at the same time and walk around. And, you know, you get a good sense of something when you're out there on the ground. We look at maps constantly, and that's nice, but you can tell you're on the site, you don't really get a good sense of where things might be.
And I don't see a regularly scheduled discussion or work session on the Dakota Pacific property for tomorrow, so that'll cover it.
That will replace it this week.
One thing I'm curious in those discussions, well, coming out of the subcommittee that was talking about a public-private partnership to redo the transit center, as we've mentioned during the broadcast, that threw out this number of $39 million for the county side of that public-private partnership, but it also seems like it hasn't really been decided who pays for what. What does that number mean, and how seriously should we take it at this point?
I don't think you should take it too seriously, but I think it's good that we start talking about what those impacts might be. When we talk about a transit center, we also have to involve High Valley Transit. We're not a transit organization necessarily. Transit's important to what the county does, and of course it's a special service district of the county. A lot of time, I know that Caroline and her team were able to pay for a lot of the existing transit center with federal funds. So some of those impacts will come hopefully from other organizations as we ramp up the Olympics, when we talk about fixes and even the bridge that goes across 224 is a UDOT expense. So there's a lot still to negotiate, and those numbers are probably really preliminary at this point.
And that's a good segue into another item on the agenda. Mountain Regional Water and High Valley Transit, a company called PRI, are all constructing things over there by the Home Depot. That property is called by the county the F.J. Gilmore property, for who previously owned it. But this looks like an infrastructure agreement. You're amending essentially how they're going to share the cost of some of that construction?
Yeah, I think what happened is that the cost of the site work, soil removal, was more significant than we first planned. As we've gone through that process, we've just contracted directly with the organization that did the work, and now this is the time when we reconcile those costs. So Mountain Regional Water has a site, High Valley Transit has a site. What did those? I know that High Valley Transit, for example, had a lot of work done on their site. We actually took a lot of that soil onto Lot 6 in exchange, and so we're compensating them for that. So this is kind of a reconciliation of that. I think if you look in the staff report, we owe High Valley Transit $700,000. I think Mountain Regional Water owes us just over $1 million. So this is just a reconciliation. Everybody knew this was coming. We've gone through this exercise to evaluate what those costs are. Some of those were infrastructure as far as utilities go as well. But this is kind of a final, what do we owe and what is owed to us? And we'll reconcile that at Wednesday's meeting.
And it seems like the lot, at least for High Valley, is fully graded now because buildings are going up. Right. Do you have an updated timeline and when that might open?
I don't, but I can't believe how fast that's going. I don't know if you've driven by there a bunch, and maybe we should have a little short celebration for the 40 being open again, because that was a tough couple of weeks for a lot of us. But
fair enough.
But I just can't believe how fast that's going. It's been really exciting to watch that building go up. I think they would like to be in there next year. So I think it's very very much on schedule and moving so quickly.
And that'll open up the Ecker Hill Park and Ride to more and more parking, because that's their de facto office now.
Yes, and I think the goal is to get rid of that big white building, and I think people will be happy to see that go.
I'm kind of attached to it at this point.
I know, it's kind of part of the landscape at this point. It might be strange to see what's behind there.
And then another thing on the agenda tomorrow is an appeal for the conditional use permit. Well, I think it's two permits for Spoil to Soil. My understanding is that composting is not necessarily defined under the county code, and so that composting facility in Browns Canyon kind of needed a jigsaw of four different permits from the county. They got two at the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission, and they need two more. What's coming before council tomorrow?
Yeah, I think that's correct. But my understanding is that the what was granted, the two of the four that were granted, is actually what's being appealed, and it's being appealed by a neighboring property owner. I think they've had some disputes about their operations, and I think the soil processing and the taking the green recycling were accepted as conditional uses. I think they still need to go back to the Planning Commission for the soil work and to have a contracting yard. And so those are still to be determined. But what's being appealed is the two that were accepted. This is a de novo appeal. The council has a lot of latitude in what they're evaluating tomorrow. And it'll be interesting to see what happens here.
Yeah, it's a little bizarre to me because even the county and so many other organizations have partnered with or plan to partner. I think you were planning to do green waste collection in the Sayreville Basin. There wasn't, unfortunately, enough buy-in from residents to make it fiscally feasible. But that was all partnering with Spoil to Soil. So what's been, have they just been operating without a permit? What's been going on?
They actually have, and they've received a couple of notices of violation. I think they've received two separate ones and even a stop work order at one point. So this is, the conditional use permit is them getting, all registered and legal. And so it's a step in the right direction. It was vetted out appropriately, and as far as I understand and in talking with the staff, I think it's a conditional use permit that was granted, and I think the Planning Commission was very careful under the circumstances with what they granted. But there, if you looked at the staff report, there's 480 pages there. So we have a great council. They always read their packets. I don't know if they read every word of this one, so it'll be probably a very interesting discussion. But there's a lot to it, and like I said, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
All right. Well, I think that's where we have to leave it. We've been speaking with Summit County Manager Shane Scott about tomorrow's County Council meeting that begins with a site visit shortly before noon in Kimball Junction. Then they will resume over there at the Richens Building at around 2:30. Shane, anything else you want to mention in closing?
Nothing else. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Well, a discussion of future public transit priorities stalled out at Wednesday's Wasatch County Council meeting last week. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has this.
The council's most recent discussion with High Valley Transit was intended to target how leaders want to spend new public transportation tax dollars. But after more than an hour and a half of conversation, council members only managed to form a transit subcommittee for future talks. High Valley Transit Executive Director Caroline Rodriguez told the council public transportation usage continues to grow in the Heber Valley nearly 2 years after the service debuted in November 2022. She says top destinations include Walmart, McDonald's, Smith's, the County Aquatic Center, and Wasatch High School. But she says, contrary to popular belief, microtransit isn't replacing school buses among local teenagers.
Now, I know there has been quite a bit of discussion about whether these trips to and from the high school are supplanting school bus service. I will tell you that I did an analysis of the data on this particular week, and out of over 300 requests to or from the high school, less than 10 of them were for hours in which a school bus would run.
Everyone agreed the county's priority is to make paratransit available for people with disabilities in Wasatch County. Unlike micro rides, paratransit users will be able to schedule up to 2 weeks in advance. They must meet federal eligibility requirements for the service. But beyond that, the council members reiterated many of the questions they'd brought up before. Council members Kendall Crittenden and Eric Rowland asked about prioritizing rides for people over 65 or limiting young riders, ideas County Manager Dustin Graybaugh described as a, quote, value judgment quagmire. And Rowland wondered if High Valley Transit could implement fares so fewer people would ride.
If we're trying to get people to get a sense of buy-in into the service, and if they have to pause and think, I don't know if I really need to go there, then that would by nature decrease the number of people using it, right?
Rodriguez pushed back against that idea. She says transit is meant to help everyone engage with the community.
That, for a public transit agency, is the antithesis of why we exist. We exist to serve the community and give access to anywhere in the community for any reason that people want. We as a public transit entity don't make the policy or the judgments based on why or when you're traveling.
In addition to funding paratransit, the council discussed ideas including making the 106 fixed bus route more frequent, building permanent bus stops, creating a park and ride, and more. Right now, additional fixed bus routes aren't on the table because the valley isn't dense enough. But Rodriguez says more data about microtransit could help determine where potential future bus stops could go.
And that's the power of the data that we're collecting with Micro, because we see those travel patterns over and over. And then we can say, actually, for this one trip, neighborhood to Walmart or midway to wherever, now we have crossed a line where it's more affordable and efficient to put in a fixed route.
County Manager Dustin Graybaugh suggested the county hold more community conversations to address residents' questions and concerns about public transportation. And Councilmember Spencer Parks said the county should form a new subcommittee to talk more about priorities for the new tax. Next year, the 0.3% sales tax will bring in an estimated $3.6 million in revenue. Of that, $2.7 million is earmarked for transportation needs. The rest will go to the Sheriff's Office for Public Safety. The tax will add a cost of 3 cents for every $10 in purchases. It will go into effect in January 2025. Grace Torfler, KPCW News.
And on the phone with me now from the Wasatch County Health Department, we've got Immunization Coordinator Brenda Scobie and Nursing Director Gina Tuttle. Good morning, both of you.
Good morning.
All right. So it's about to be COVID and flu season, and I know there are some options for Wasatch County residents as far as getting your vaccinations this year. But maybe a preliminary question, either of you can answer this. It doesn't seem like COVID is as bad as it used to be. Why still get the vaccine?
From my experience, just locally, we're seeing so many shows in the schools get COVID and being at home to families. So I think it's a great time to get vaccinated.
Gotcha. It's a little hard to hear you if you can get a little closer to the microphone there. But maybe we can run through some of the clinics that are available. I know October 8th looks like a drive-through, and the 17th and 18th are walk-in clinics. Where are these located for folks?
Yeah, October 8th is today from 3 to 6, and it's at the Event Center in Heber.
Gotcha. Are they free, and what do people need to bring if they want to get a vaccine?
They need to bring their insurance card and their ID, and they don't need an appointment. They can just drive through. They don't get out of their car, and we can just check them right in, and it's quick and efficient. And we have vaccines for people who are uninsured, but insurance will pay for these vaccines. But if they're uninsured, we have a program through the state where these are $12 vaccines. But if they have insurance, the insurance will pay for them as well.
Gotcha. And the kids can get their vaccines at school this year. Is that a new thing, or has that been always a program you've offered?
So we've been doing this for the last 3 years. This is our third year. We've currently been in 3 schools. We have a school this week, and then we'll finish up the last 5 at the end of the month.
All right. What do parents need to know? Do they need to provide insurance information, any other paperwork for their kids if they'd like to get a vaccine that way?
To sign up for your vaccine this year, we have a QR code that was sent out to parents through an email. There's posters, there's sandwich boards around the schools. You can just scan the QR code and sign your child up for a vaccine.
Gotcha. And is that for both COVID and flu? Do you offer RSV or anything else like that?
We're only offering flu this year, and COVID will be through our drive-thru.
Gotcha. What's sort of the current thinking on getting all the vaccines all at once, or at least COVID and flu together? Is that effective? Is it safe? Should you spread them out a little bit?
It is effective and safe, and we do recommend it because a lot of people don't come back for the second one. So we definitely say, while you're there, get them both. You can separate them, but right now is the height of flu and COVID. We're seeing a lot more COVID cases, and so we just say do them both.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm curious how you're seeing COVID cases right now, because are people still testing, or do you have a way to look at wastewater?
We do. We sample our wastewater, and we're seeing increased numbers in Wasatch County and
Midway,
and Heber,
What sort of the degree of increase that you're seeing compared to past surges or past years, especially at the height of the pandemic?
It's definitely lower than at the height of the pandemic. However, currently we are seeing some spikes in our wastewater testing.
And, you know, I looked at a report this morning that 1 in 12 people in our state have long COVID. Is this something that you're tracking as well?
No, the state of Wasatch County is not tracking that, but the state is.
You know, what are sort of the symptoms of long COVID, and is this something that the vaccines have been able to help with? Is it still sort of a mystery what's going on with these lingering symptoms after infection?
There's over 400 side effects and symptoms for long-term COVID. So it's kind of a wide array of symptoms.
Gotcha. So we spoke about the clinics again. There is one today, drive-through. Where can folks find information online about that, and what time is it available again?
It is at the event center today from 3 to 6. We have postings around town, as well as we've got postings on our social media page for Wasatch County. We also, if I can make a plug, we've got some walk-in clinics on October 17th and 18th from 10 to 3. And they don't need an appointment. They can just come in, walk in. We can check them in here. So we have different options, but we strongly encourage COVID and flu.
Also at the event center for the walk-in clinics?
The walk-in clinics are here at Wasatch County Health Department.
All right, very good.
But the drive-through is today from 3 to 6 at the event center.
Anything else you'd like to mention in closing?
No, go get your flu and COVID shots.
All right, we've been speaking with the Wasatch County Health Department's Immunization Coordinator, Brenda Scobie, and Nursing Director, Gina Tuttle. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, Deer Valley wants to construct an underground parking garage as part of its plan for a new village in Snow Park. Residents can weigh in on the proposal at two public hearings this month. The Park City Planning Commission recently began a review of Deer Valley's plans for Snow Park. The resort's seeking to completely transform the base area with a ski-in, ski-out village surrounded by 115 hotel rooms, 83 condos, and about 30,000 square feet of space for retail stores, restaurants, and bars. As proposed, the plan calls for moving parking underground to make room for the new development. The first phase of the project under review by the Planning Commission involves plans to build a three-level underground garage and public transit hub adjacent to the existing Snow Park Lodge. The commission is holding a meeting October 9th and a special meeting October 30th to review the proposal. A public hearing will be held at both of those. The second phase of approval will focus on the residential units and commercial space. Deer Valley could file that application with the city later this year. And the Utah Department of Natural Resources is warning residents about 24 water bodies that still have harmful algal blooms. Two of the reservoirs are here in the Wasatch Back. Blooms have been reported at Rockport and Deer Creek and may sicken people and pets that drink the water. DNR is warning people not to swim in any water body under the advisory. Blooms form when naturally occurring bacteria multiply to high densities and form visible water discoloration in mats. Harmful blooms can look like pea soup, spilled paint, grass clippings, or water that has a green or blue-green hue. More information at kpcw.org. And here with me in studio is the former executive director and board chair of the Christian Center of Park City, Rob Harder, and their new exec, Steve Richardson. Thank you for joining me, gentlemen.
You bet. Thanks for having us.
All right. So, Steve, you're on the job currently. When did you take the job?
So I took it 6 days ago. I started October 1st, and it's been quite an amazing whirlwind just getting to know the community and falling in love with the people.
Yeah. What's some of the stuff you've done before? Can you tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and where you've been?
Yeah, so for the last 25 years, I've been an active duty chaplain in the Air Force, which means I've traveled all around the world helping young airmen and older airmen with relationships, resiliency, bouncing back from struggles and difficulties, been through four deployments, and helping people, whether they have faith or not have a faith, just find a sense of hope and purpose in their lives.
So what's been the order of the day since you've, I guess, taken office, if that's the right word to use? Any major changes, things that you've done?
So in the last 6 days, it's really just getting to know the amazing people at CCPC. It's really fascinating that these people are willing to come to this area, willing to get paid a little bit less to work in nonprofit, but so dedicated to helping people thrive, helping people flourish in life.
Yeah, and Rob, you were executive director for 14 years.
Yeah.
Why'd you step back?
Yeah, I was ready. I was just ready to do some more things in my own personal life and professional life, but I still wanted to be part of the organization, so it's so nice to be able to be on the board. And so as I go into consulting and coaching, I'll still be able to help, you know, support it, be a resource to Steve, and just make sure there's a good handoff.
Yeah, what are some of the things that you've been able to collaborate on, and, you know, what's been the... I don't know, the learning curve like for both of you?
I'm definitely telling them where the good restaurants are to go to for lunch and whatnot and coffee. So I'm definitely scouting that out for you.
You're doing really well.
Very good. Yeah. But yeah, what do you think? How do you think it's going?
So far, so good. We're having a nice handoff and really getting to know some members of the community. It's just been wonderful getting to see his heart and his passion over the last 14 years. He has built such an amazing organization dedicated to helping people, not just to meeting needs, but to help people flourish. And I've been fascinated every time I look at what he's accomplished and thinking, I don't know if I could have done that. I'm so glad he was here 14 years ago rather than me, and he's able to pass over this thing that could really help the whole community find a purpose and find value and find that flourishing in life.
Yeah, and the announcement that you took the job, Steve, mentioned that over the past 14 years, you know, you'd been on a growth trajectory.
Yeah.
What are some of the things? I know Summit Exchange just opened. That's
your
second store.
Right.
But you've got the mobile food pantry. What sort of things have been growing that, you know, might be able to continue to grow under Steve?
Yeah, so fun. You know, as I look over, we did this quick review a couple of weeks ago, one of my last weeks there. It's so hard to encapsulate 14 years, you know, just in one day. But, you know, a couple of things. The Counseling Center started in 2012, and that's just grown and grown. And I see that continuing to grow. In fact, I'll be a part of that even in my role now as a consultant. Definitely the mobile food pantry, and our food pantry in general. Food insecurity is a real issue here, both in Wasatch and Summit counties, and that continues to grow. I see that's something that Steve will continue to expand and grow. Sadly, the need is still there. Our stores, certainly Summit Exchange is actually our fourth store. If you can believe it, we had two stores when I came, and now we have the Heber store and then our Summit Exchange store. So I see that growing. And what I'm always amazed by, Connor, is that the amount of things that are donated by this community to our organization. We always thought, oh, we'll get to a place where we've kind of run out of donations. We have never hit that goal, and that's thanks to the community and their generosity. So that just continues to grow, and we see that not stopping.
Yeah, and Steve, as you hear about this, what are the things that you hear that you think like, oh, that's great, I want to continue that, and I'm sure you're not without new ideas as well.
Sure, so I really got passionate about the Counseling Center. The fact that we're not just meeting people's physical needs for food, we're not just meeting physical needs for shelter and for clothing, which we're doing all of that, but then to take hold of their emotional needs, their relational needs, and providing that at such a discount and providing so many scholarships for people because of the generosity of our community, being able to provide counseling both in Spanish and in English to so many people throughout this base, or throughout this place. My background is in counseling. That's what I did in the Air Force, was I was the subject matter expert for relationships for the Air Force for a few years, and having a master's in counseling and so forth. And so just to see a place that is dedicated to helping people thrive no matter who they are, mentally, emotionally, it's just been amazing.
How much Spanish language counseling is there in our community right now?
Not enough, I'll be honest with you, not enough.
Fair enough.
We're always constantly, looking for more people to hire. I know People's Health Clinic is a great partner. They have some as well, so we're trying to do this together.
Yeah. How many counselors do you have on staff? Is that the right thing? Are they just more of a contract situation? How do you provide that service?
So we do have 13?
Yeah, technically, yes. 13 and then 13 four counselors. That provides administration.
Right.
So 17 total.
17 total, but 13 counselors who are all either licensed or getting their license. Some of them speak Spanish, some of them don't speak Spanish. We're trying to get more, obviously, that speak Spanish. But they're all dedicated to the center. That's where they work. That's where they provide their care and support. And they do it at a bit of a discount because they really do care about this community.
Do you take insurance, stuff like that?
We sure do. Yeah, that's one of the things that set us apart early on.
Yeah. And I do want to definitely mention there are open houses coming up next month where people can meet you, Steve. When and where will you be?
So we're going to be at the center for a few days. We got it on the website, a couple of days that we're having that available. Obviously, if they want to meet me, I'd love to meet anybody. They can just email the center. And it doesn't matter who you are. I just love to get to know you because that's why I'm here. This is my 27th move. And I want it to be one of my last. I mean, I really want to stay here many, many years.
Like physical place that you've lived.
27th place that I've lived.
That's incredible, yeah.
Growing up in the military, being in the military myself, I've just never stayed anywhere more than 3 years. And that was part of the reason why we're here, is we want to set up roots. We want to get to know the community. We want to really be a part of everybody's lives and to help everybody, no matter who you are, to flourish.
Then those dates for people listening are November 7th, 12th, and 21st. I know this past weekend you had the ski swap.
Yeah.
I think it was at Summit Exchange this year. I was out of town and missed it.
Oh,
so
Connor.
What's the ski swap situation currently? We have the ongoing
The big one, of course. Yep.
Above the flagship location.
Yeah, that's correct. And they'll continue at the Summit Exchange as well. There's some great deals still available. And of course, there's another ski swap that will happen at Basin Rec, of course. So there's so many good options out there. But yes, in terms of our store, Summit Exchange, you'll still get some really, really good deals. Encourage you to check it out.
And I can testify to that because I didn't have anything.
Ah, that's right. There you
so
go.
I had to buy some winter gear for myself. It's been a while since I've been
perfect.
Around snow,
yep.
Since I lived in Alaska back 14 years ago. So this is nice to get
back
up to
speed
it.
Quickly. That's
yes.
good.
All right. Anything else that you want to mention today, gentlemen?
Just that we're so thankful for the community to support
exactly.
us, to volunteer. If you'd like to get involved, we'd love to have you. We're always looking for more volunteers. We're always looking for more people who really want to catch hold of that fire in themselves to help others, and we want to make that possible.
And I'll just add, we have those different dates. You can go to our website and find out when you can come and do the meet and greet with Steve. I encourage you to get to know him, and then he's going to do some interpretive dance, I understand, which is going to be amazing, Connor. That's really what you want to show up to see. So.
Can't do it on radio.
You don't want to.
Okay, maybe not.
Yeah. Well, that's Rob Harder, board chair of the Christian Center of Park City, and we've been speaking with Steve Richardson, their new executive director. Thank you both.
Thank you, Connor.
The nonprofit Citizens Climate Lobby is hosting a forum to help voters understand candidates' positions on climate and environmental issues. The forum will feature Summit County Council candidates Megan McKenna, Ari Ioannidis, Roger Armstrong, and Tori Welch. Candidates in the race for the Utah House of Representatives will also be there. Chris Campbell is running to represent District 4, covering parts of Summit, Daggett, Duchesne, Morgan, and Ridge counties. Julie Moynihan is running to represent District 59, that covers parts of Summit and Wasatch. Incumbent Republican Representatives Kara Berkland and Mike Kohler don't plan to attend, but the event is tonight, Tuesday, at the Jim Santee Auditorium. That's at the Park City Library. It starts at 6, goes until 7:30 p.m. It will not be streamed live or available online. Well, a new subdivision along Interstate 80 in Silver Creek Estates will need a new road, but the naming rights are going to auction to benefit charity. Columbus Pacific Development owns property at the northwest corner of I-80 and Silver Creek Road and a second lot farther west along the highway. The 17-acre property on the west will become five lots and a cul-de-sac, says Columbus Pacific principal Tony Tyler. To subdivide it, he's going through the so-called platting process with Summit County to determine where buildings and the future road need to be placed.
But I actually need the name to put on the plat.
Instead of choosing one himself, Tyler's auctioning off the naming rights. He says 100% of proceeds will go to PC Tots and the Early Childhood Alliance, who plan to split it evenly. PC Tots is a Park City preschool where Tyler sits on the board of trustees. The Early Childhood Alliance is a subsidiary of the nonprofit Park City Community Foundation, working to make childcare more accessible through advocacy and lobbying, including studying gaps in the local childcare market.
I mean, I think there's no better way to really give back to the community, and in such a meaningful and material way. And you get a nice little perk out of it.
That auction is open now until October 25th. And Park City's replacing an aging retaining wall next to City Hall along Marsac Avenue ahead of the winter. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports there will be parking and EV charging impacts.
Construction crews will be repairing a retaining wall near City Hall's front door over the next few weeks. Engineers determined the retaining wall is failing and needs immediate replacement. The City Council recently approved a $1.5 million contract to replace the wall before winter arrives in Old Town. The parking area outside City Hall's front doors before the China Bridge garage gate will be closed during the repairs. Drivers on Marsac Avenue can expect traffic delays until the project is complete. Residents can still access City Hall's main entrance using the China Bridge garage stairway. ADA access is available in the North Marsac parking lot on the north side of City Hall. EV chargers are available in Bobwell's Plaza and on the second level of the China Bridge garage. City officials have not confirmed an end date, but say the goal is to complete repairs before winter. Parking is free in Old Town Park City until November 20th, with the exception of Shotski October 12th and Halloween on Main. The city says it's an effort to ease the impacts of the Main Street waterline repairs and road closures on local businesses. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.